And then I got to watch The Usual Suspects again, because God knows some of the most amazing movies of all time include The Usual Suspects, and, oh God, what was, oh, The Outer Limits of screenwriting weirdness, just pushing it beyond all recognition, was that you know, that Almodovar movie, Talk to Her, you know, because Lamar Sanders gets up in front of the class and he's like, I can't even tell you where the Activisions are on this. I don't know. And then the evening,
but it has a giant vagina.
Yeah, but that's just so fucking weird. Like, you can't go any further than that in film, man. The avant-garde was just a bad dream. Antonioni was smoking crack the whole time. And then,
hold on.
I know I'm on the fucking tape, man. And then the evening we watch The Usual Suspects, it's downstairs, and so there's theaters back to back, and the theater opposite is studying film scores, and they that night, by coincidence, happen to be studying the score for The Usual Suspects.
So you got to hear it.
So we got to hear the score in, like, quadraphonic sound. And that's why I became an English major. And we're live.
And welcome once again to Lickman and Rizzoff Live at Grassroots Tavern. As always, I am John Lickman, contributor to The House Next Door and Corporate Whore.
I am Vadim Rizov, embittered contributor, freelance hack, and beneficiary of professional nepotism.
And English major.
Yes.
Joining us tonight is William Akers.
William Akers, right here. And I am nothing, but I'm here.
That's not true. Will is actually the current film editor of our
Washington Square News, NYU's finest and only student newspaper. NYU Today,
NYU Forever.
Oh, and also blog contributor.
And blog, how did you know that?
I reread Gawker.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Was that on Gawker?
Yeah.
No kid, the naked thing?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, no, not the naked thing. The one where you talk about dating.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they claimed you were the dating columnist.
Great.
And then they retracted it when someone wrote in and said, no, he's not.
God, you figured my editor would have emailed me about that.
I don't know, but congratulations.
So, blog dating columnist William Akers is here to talk about, for some reason, movies.
And we're especially pleased to have you because both John and me served lengthy prison sentences at Washington Square News, where we benefited immensely from the care, skill, and knowledge of our knowledgeable editor-in-chief and managing editor. And we wouldn't be able to sit in this bar and drink today and be turning our hairs gray with despair if we hadn't been there. So we want to thank everyone who works there.
I only stayed along so I could fight Andrew O'Hare one day. So I'm going to knock him out.
Yeah. I will say the Washington Square News is a fine publication.
You can say that.
I just
you
did.
You can say that.
It is a fine publication, 6 days a week, 30 or something weeks a year. It's there for you.
And it's there when the recycling men come around every week.
I'd like to know how much, like, paper stock they're going through. I mean, like, how many, you know, bad novels could you print on, like, the newsprint that they're wasting every day?
I don't know. I think that is a bad novel.
Yeah.
Let's get right into it. Vadim, you want to start with the Ben Stein documentary?
Right. You know, as a freelancer, Phil Village voice, it is, and I don't want to knock this. It's a pleasure to get paid to do this. That said, I am a novice to this field, and sometimes I get assigned things that I might not go watch on my spare time. And one of these is the documentary Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, co-written by Antoine Ben Stein. Now, by the time you read this, my capsule review will already be available, but it was 200 words, and I feel like this movie deserves to be denounced at length. Basically, what happens in this movie is Ben Stein plays dumb, which is distressing because he was on Win Ben Stein's Money, and starts by interviewing a bunch of people who were fired for saying intelligent design isn't creationism. It's a disinterested scientific attempt to find the intelligence of a creator in DNA, and what could be fairer than that? And eventually he interviews some guy who's like, hey, what would happen if society relied on Darwinism in their everyday beliefs? And Ben Stein says in voiceover, as a Jew, my thoughts naturally turn to one society. And then he goes to one of Dr. Mengele's fun camps, and then you find him sitting on the train tracks at Dachau with the respected author of a book called From Darwin to Hitler. I should mention something that the movie doesn't, namely that this man is a member of the Discovery Institute, the leading proponents of ID, quote-unquote, science in the United States of America. Through the powers of montage, we were informed that the wall between those fascist communistic evolutionists is akin to the Berlin Wall, which through the powers of shitty montage means that Ben Stein is Ronald Reagan. If you're really stoned, you still like shouldn't watch this movie. I did it. You don't have to. John is drawing because as a corporate whore, he's not capable of written text. That's why his journalism degree didn't pay off.
Very much so. So what you're saying is you didn't like this propaganda. But also, don't forget, this film is being like carefully screened to other reviewers.
It's not yes.
Yeah. So, and you were given a special screening for this for one purpose.
I was privileged to be able to watch this movie without distraction in the Park Avenue screening room, for which unironic thanks to the publicist because it saved my ass deadline wise. Just because all you retards like Ferris fucking Bueller's Day Off because you can't discriminate between ironic nostalgia and what you actually like, you are directly responsible for this piece of shit. All of you in your ways, through your multiple reviewings of Casper late at night just for the Ben Stein cameo, have directly contributed to fascist Christian propaganda. And I hope that you feel warm at night.
What about people who buy Visine? Or no, Clear Eyes.
Right. You know, a friend of mine actually won when Ben Stein's money won. So, I think it's kind of cool that he wrote for the Nixon administration. You know, like, Richard Nixon's one of my favorite presidents. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding.
Speaking of fascists, Charlton Heston.
Hey!
That's what happened this week.
Dead at 84, and at 12 a.m. on Sunday, countless people made I Can Finally Take His Gun jokes.
Yeah. And so, I hope he died holding his gun. Wouldn't that have been great? Like, they stuffed it into his hand so he could die, and they could pull it out of him.
That would be pretty good. But here's the big question. How many Heston films can we name aside from the top three?
With the top three being...
Aside from what?
How many of the Heston films can we name aside
from... the top
from?
Three?
Soylent Green, Planet of the Apes,
mm-hmm.
and...
Ten Commandments. Omega Man.
Okay.
We forget one of the two movies in history that has won 11 Academy Awards, namely the unwatchable Ben-Hur, Charlton Heston pretends not to be gay for Stephen Boyd for 4 hours?
Hang on, Ben-Hur is an important film. It's helping out 7th grade Latin students all over the country every year who get like 5 weeks off to watch Ben-Hur. It's much worse than Spartacus.
We just watched Gladiator, I don't know.
Oh yeah, we had Spartacus and Ben-Hur. Gladiator was more fun.
Spartacus, really?
Yeah, Spartacus is great.
Yeah. And I did talk, because my Latin teacher was and is a wonderful asshole, I love you, sir, and I talked him into getting the school to fund us to go see The Passion of the Christ. We couldn't get the school buses for it, unfortunately, but we were allowed the afternoon off, because it's in Latin, man!
Yeah.
So I'm proud to say that I spearheaded that. That's neither here nor there, regarding Mr. Heston.
And so, after that...
Charlton Heston is a cameo in Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet.
Oh, but you're forgetting the best cameo.
Queensville 2.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
As he relates his true love.
What is this movie?
Queensville 2. At the very end, Wayne driving his car.
Can't we get a better actor for this? And they bring out Charlton.
He's in Town and Country as a gun nut. He's in his son, Fraser Heston's dismal debut, Alaska, starring a then-clothed Thora Birch.
Hey, Dad, can you come be in my movie?
Thankfully, Colin Hanks has never asked that.
He's a better man than Fraser Heston.
Or he has, and Tom just said, "No, son, I will not be in Untraceable. I will not be in the weird voyeur movie." But
Charlton Heston was in The Agony and the Ecstasy as Michelangelo, opposite Rex Harrison as Pope Julius.
Wow.
Yeah. That's another good one. I haven't seen most of these movies.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you don't need to. It's good. You just have to know that it's there.
You just know the quotes. Ben-Hur, he slips on a shingle, kills someone. It's great.
They do the Roman salute. I like that.
Yeah.
Or no, handshake. The salute is...
Yeah, the salute we can't show.
No.
But putting the Noel Murray stop clock back into place.
Of course.
we're now going to do a brief discussion on the state of animation, because Disney announced today that,
which will be a week from now by the time you hear this.
But still, they've announced at least 12 of their upcoming films for the 2009-2010
films, not 12.
Oh, fuck you.
This is why you don't work as a journalist anymore.
Oh, because I can afford my apartment?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, the 10 films, two of which are sequels, Toy Story 3, where little Andy goes to college, and Cars 2, where they finally show how the cars have sex, using the AllSpark.
I think that was Southland Tales, man. I think you got it mixed up.
Okay. Oh, right. Cars 2 is about Lightning McQueen decides to
It's about Paul Newman's brave and courageous battle with cancer, represented in car form.
But the big news is that 8 of these films are all CGI. Only 2 will be 2D hand-drawn animation. So I bring up to you, is 2D animation dead? Is it just not popular anymore? I know 3D is faster to make, by now cheaper than it is to employ a team of 150 animators. But, wow, that's a big-ass roach. Going on, is 2D dead?
That's 2 more movies than they would have made in 2D like 3 years ago, though.
Yeah. What else has come out of 2D recently?
You're aware that we're discussing something that's approximately 15 years old as a debate, correct?
Well, yes, but still.
Sorry, please continue.
Maybe we should just boil it down to this. Which 2D Disney film do you remember the most? And you can't say Bambi. That's a cop-out answer.
Robin Hood. Robin Hood is good. The Fox, that's cute.
John, please give me some time. Go ahead.
Oh, well, thank you, sir. I'm going to go with the non-Disney answer to be edgy, Brave Little Toaster.
Oh, God, I hate that movie.
That is a Disney movie.
Oh, that's right. There.
I believe it might have been outsourced to, like, a Korean company or something, but yeah, it's a Disney movie.
They still have hands.
Yeah. The Great Mouse Detective featuring Vincent Price as Radigan. And also, I will nominate the Much Pissed Upon Arabian Night by Richard Williams, who made like the first animated movie in CinemaScope in like 30 years, only to see it recut, redubbed, renamed, and have some kind of atrocious Jonathan Winters voiceover added to what was supposed to be a silent part. I'm still angry about this. I was angry when I was 9. It's a great movie. You can see the trailer on Netflix. I know I've watched it multiple times. You should too.
Thank you. Thank you.
But, you know, I feel like the list we just gave is incredibly racist, Western-based, hegemonic, and otherwise imperialist, because we've ignored the greatest country in the entire world and the greatest movies in the entire world.
Which one's that, Fadine?
When we ignored Japanese anime.
OMG!
Yeah.
That's like my field of specialty.
Now, I feel that Western animation is the outmoded vestigial remains of a capitalistic system that has oppressed otaku since time immemorial.
And yet you're going to mistakenly use otaku like that. That just shows me your love and dedication.
Just to show you my contempt.
That's an exhibition of the oppression, though.
Yeah, exactly.
He should have learned this in public school in third grade.
It was a clever postmodern device to draw attention to the problem. In case I didn't know how to use the word postmodern correctly, in which case, here we are.
If you didn't, I could happily piss in your ears.
But that wouldn't be audio. This is the worst podcast we've ever done.
I think it is, but that's what you get when Keith Ulick, our normal editor, is gone.
He's in Sarasota, the bastard.
Well, this will be edited, right?
Sort of.
All right.
Maybe.
In practice.
We'll see. But
just cut out all the offensive parts. Like the parts that could, like, stop me from getting jobs, basically.
No, we're keeping all those in.
Fuck you.
So, let's move from animation to a topic very near and dear to Vadim's heart, Outlaw Vern.
Mm.
Outlaw Vern had a pretty good April Fool's Day joke, and Vadim wants to tell you all about it.
Outlaw Vern is the Sometime Antiquals News reviewer, by far the best of the bunch. He also has a GeoCities website that you should all read. And for April Fools, he came up with a fake blog that was sponsored by something like eight people, like Cheetos, Fandango, High School Musical, I forget what else. And it fake ads like Fandango because buying tickets is too fucking hard. I think there was a yogurt ad that brightened your teeth at the same time. But the real crux of it was a series of parodies. Now, I don't know who reads these movie blogs. Who the fuck are you idiots? And why are you keeping... You know, I know that a list is just irresistible, you know. And God knows that making your opinion count in a poll because your day job won't fucking listen to you must be just fucking irresistible. But, you know, so you had a fake poll that said, like, sequels. Do you prefer them or are they the ones, quote, to watch for? Ha ha ha. And a fake Shrek 4 window decal with an exclusive 72-hour window. Basically, everything that's terrible about movie blogs, the shameless passing along of publicity crap as an insight into a movie, like a Transformers 2 poster. The idea that people get excited over poster releases is insane. What is wrong with you people? These people, they're not even collectible anymore. Like, get the fuck over it. Anyway.
So as you can understand, Vadim,
I immediately changed my Facebook profile to a quote from the movie. I mean, yes, Ultimate Pandas. By definition, all other DVDs about pandas are penultimate or less.
And it's with that we go on to our newest feature here at the podcast, which is Vadim Rizov Loves Popular Movies, in which Vadim will discuss the upcoming releases of this week, and you will hear about them next week as he reads The Village Voice.
All right. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. By the time you hear this, all of these movies will be out already. So what I have to say is completely irrelevant, because I haven't seen any of them. Let's be closer. I'm sorry, readers. Obviously, the most important release of the week is Street Kings, which I plan to be seeing as soon as possible. A movie that combines the screenwriting talents of L.A. Confidential author James Ellroy with the prowess of Equilibrium writer-director Kurt Wimmer.
Now, what is it about, actually? Because all I saw was Keanu jump over a refrigerator after he pushes it and then shoot someone.
Well, I believe the point of the movie is the underexplored theme that vengeance and vigilante justice is may not be the best possible path to success.
Truly? Because I see it as a continuation of The Shield, where Keanu Reeves is a big
actor. Let's not forget that David Ayer, who directed this film, his last film was the underrated Harsh Times, in which Christian Bale and Freddie Rodriguez, among other things, threatened to beat up a bodega owner because he won't sell them individual cigarettes instead of the whole pack, and then go visit a gentleman who appears to be on his third 40 of the day at 11 a.m. to step outside into what Matt Zoller cites, hey, proprietor, coined a ghetto wonderland, where there's always a shooting on the street.
Why don't you tell us about Smart People, Vadim?
Smart People is a movie about Dennis Quaid. I don't know.
And Juno. Juno's in it.
I watched the trailer for it today. It looks pretty hot.
Oh, it stars Sarah Jessica Parker. Take your girlfriends. Come on, guys. Get your shit together.
But better still, Ellen Page. So every...
She's not actually in it. I don't know where you heard that. That's like completely inaccurate.
Her name is Juno.
Oh, sorry.
She's also not in the movie. Prom Night, a remake of a shitty 80s slasher movie, has been remade as a shitty slasher movie. Chaos Theory by the director of Pretty Persuasion, starring Ryan Reynolds. Oh, before I forget, I'm so sorry, by the time you hear this, it'll be over. But the first run film festival at NYU is taking place this weekend. You don't want to see shitty student films. I don't know what the fuck is wrong with you. And that concludes my wrap up, and the American Apparel ad on the back of The Voice is very nice this week.
And I am.
Has been Vadim Rizov Loves Popular Movies.
And fuck all of you for watching this shit.
Actually, Vadim, they can't watch audio. They can watch it load.
You illiterate lowbrow son of a bitch.
They can watch an oscilloscope.
That's true. Oh, hey, you're right. If you download an Audacity, you can see it.
I use that word once a day.
But, I was wondering if you could talk about something, because you said you were at the Film Forum recently for a film that you truly enjoyed.
I saw a double bill of Stagecoach and Red River, two very popular movies that I will stand up for any time. They're both classic westerns, they both have John Wayne, both of them have a main character falling in love with a whore. Stagecoach has a couple of fantastic Indian attacks, which is amazing because if there's one thing I hate, it's engines. All the Indian attacks are cued with war music and, like, you know, war drums being beat, you know, people smoking peace pipes and, like, you know, dance around a fire, basically.
Well, let me ask you this without any hatred intended. Are you one of those jackasses who goes to the film forum and laughs like a hyena whenever you see anything that's antiquated?
No, I'm not. I laugh at the jokes.
All right, because there's a bunch of people who go to the forum and just laugh their asses off when they think something is old or corny.
No.
Just want to make sure you...
Well, I mean, every so often you can't help yourself, but mostly I'm willing to suspend disbelief, pretend that it's, you know, World War II is happening right now, and it's okay to laugh at a Japanese man.
But see, I only do that during Woody Allen films, especially with... But that girl's too young for you, and I can't help but crack up. Because, I mean, honestly, the films don't stand up.
You don't think so?
Woody Allen movies?
Well, no.
I don't like Woody Allen. Go for it. I mean, please.
I don't think they stand up for the fact that, yes, it's great to see this cinematic snapshot of Manhattan in the 80s.
Yeah.
Great. But, really, is the Upper East Side like that anymore? No. I mean, I think it's a great look back. But...
Well, I mean, if you want to be serious about this, Hogan pointed out his review. His re-review of Manhattan was re-released about a year or so back. That Woody Allen's a New York... He might have filmed it at the very last second that it possibly existed, but it was already pretty much a fantasy.
Yeah.
There's a conscious embrace of frankly, upper-class porn fantasy that Woody, bizarrely, through monologues about his sexual obsessions, managed to acquire access to. So, frankly, I think social context is completely irrelevant to these movies.
Well, let's go back to...
I still don't like it.
Let's go back to something that we mentioned on the last podcast.
Filmmakers are allowed to pretend.
But the last podcast, we talked about favorite New York scenes. Now, granted, you can have a Woody Allen scene. But which filmmaker so far has shown New York in such a good light? Like, in a, not good light, but the most...
Andy Tennant, the director of films like Mary Kate and Ashley's It Takes Two and Ever After, starring Drew Barrymore, gave what I thought was a great depiction of New York in his Will Smith, Eva Mendes romantic comedy Hitch. Great New York movie.
Now, in terms of showcasing Soho...
The steps of the Metropolitan Museum, a place that is, we know, every New Yorker goes to every Saturday, which I only personally go to when I'm baked, but I mean, it's good if you're stoned, so check that out.
And if we were to be serious for a moment, what would you say?
You mean like in a, like this is a good place to live kind of way?
No, but in a...
Gossip Girl makes it look pretty nice.
Yeah, that's true.
Ladies and gentlemen, presenting NYU student Blakes.
But also, they got rid of the Asian girl. I have no reason to watch now. Yeah, it sucks.
I was watching, a few months ago, I watched Nadja again, this Michael Almereyda movie from 94, the lesbian vampire black and white movie that I like, with Peter Fonda stoned out of his mind. And it's made in 94, and at one point, someone says, like, I have to go to Brooklyn. Have you ever been to Brooklyn? And she says, once. No, maybe twice. It was a long time ago. It's like, this is a good time capsule.
I will say that my favorite is, in fact, another vampire movie, Habit by Larry Fessenden. If only because Larry Fessenden, in a key moment, is walking on the street, drinking a six-pack of Bud, throwing cans as he finishes them, and then goes to his friend, hey, let's get a drink. Where do you want to go? Let's go to Cocktail. No, man, I don't want to go to Cocktail. Let's go to Big Bar. Okay? And then they each walk separate ways to their separate bars. Now, I do like that. I also like the fact that the opening is a Halloween party in the village where Fessenden gets so drunk he can't figure out where he is. This is the girl that he was trying to hook up with. Gets on the train, on the F train from West 4th Street, rides into Brooklyn, and then rides back with his pants sliced up in the leg. He wakes up the next day over the bridge. That I like.
I think that's happened to me once.
Yeah, no, it's actually happened to Vadim three times.
Yeah.
But he's been taking the L, not the F.
This isn't New York. This is John and Vadim's New York.
Sort of.
The authentic New York, I like to call it.
Also, Larry Fessenden is drunk out of his mind for most of the film, so that's why I like it.
Just come to mind while you listen to this. Do you know who Larry Fessenden is?
Nope.
I know, but I don't care. So this is really just John's thing.
Larry Fessenden is like...
I think I'm going to invoke the Noel Murray stop clock here right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Noel Murray stop clock invoked.
Boom.
Damn, that hurts. And so, we're winding down, and... Let's see. Next on our list is a picture of Vadim sucking Intelligent Design's dick.
Oh, I thought that was a rocket. I thought it was blowing up his head.
Actually, wait.
If that's a dick, now it's pointy.
It is now a rocket dick.
Okay.
Aimed at Vadim's head. I like this.
Oh. That's the sound of CEO's cum hitting your face when you walk into the office every morning.
It's also the sound of me being a few $1,000s richer than you.
A few $1,000s? Try like 10 or 15.
Wow. What happened to the rest of that money then?
What rest of money are you talking about? What on earth are you talking about? Yes! I'm sorry, the glamorous life of freelancing. Oh, I forgot. All that money went on strippers and blow and...
So, Will, as you listen to this, to the sad prowling of a drunk Russian guy...
You too can be like this when you graduate.
Did you see the Observer article about freelancing last week?
No, I didn't.
It was incredibly depressing.
What did it say?
It was by Dory, you know, from Crocker.
Dory, yeah.
Yeah, who's fantastic. And it was just like interviewing, I don't know, four or five different old-style journalists just talking about how magazines are dead, newspapers are dead, and like giving all these like actual numbers on how it's impossible to make a living doing this.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like people, I would never hire a new writer, never, ever, ever. And it was very, very depressing.
I'm gonna get a temp job as soon as I graduate. Like, I can make a supplemental income off this, but you, no to any future competitors, A, I'll come and rip your head off, B, it's you're not gonna make a full-time living off it anyway. Be an editor. What did your editor say? John, editors live, writers starve.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it is on that note that I think we are going to wind down tonight's episode.
Mercifully sparing you our vile and lack of direction without Keith Hewlett.
Yes. Thanks for listening.
So this has been episode 9.
And listen, if any of you actually make it to the end of this episode, because as far as I know, no one ever has, please call me at 512-517-4689, because frankly, I don't think anyone did. And I'll take your Carl Deer Knight. Thank you.
And so this has been episode 9, the Fuck Shit Boob Damn Underage Edition, with our special guest, William Akers.
Hello, goodbye.
For Vadim Rizov and Keith Hewlett, who is clearly shaking in fear right now in Sarasota. I'm John Blickman, and thank you for listening once again.